Okay, so staying on financial instruments.
Okay. Yeah, so the objective of the session is to provide you with a brief overview of the board's tentative decision to propose the limited scope amendment to IFRS 9 in relation to the classification of financial asset with symmetric prepayment option. After a short presentation from me, we'll open up the session for any comments that you have so that we are aware of them as we draft the amendment and take any questions you might have so that we can support the outreach activity in your jurisdictions. So, as a background, how did this all start? In November 2016, the Interpretation Committee received a submission asking how to classify financial assets with symmetric prepayment option applying IFRS 9. Most committee members were of the view the prepayment option described in the submission does not meet the SPPI condition in IFRS 9, and applying IFRS 9, it must be measured at fair value through profit. At the same meeting, the committee members suggested that ISB consider changing the requirements in IFRS 9. In light of the recommendation and similar concerns of interest parties, the board decided to propose a narrow scope amendment to IFRS 9. So, what do we mean by symmetric prepayment option? The financial asset described in the submission allow the borrower to prepay the financial instrument at an amount reflecting the remaining contractual cash flows discounted at the market interest rate. So this means, depending on the market interest rate changes, the prepayment amount could be more than or less than the unpaid amount of principal and interest. In other words, the compensation on prepayment can go either direction, hence the reference to symmetric, and could result in a negative compensation to the party who is forced to accept the early termination of the contract. Applying IFRS 9, such contractual cash flows are not solely payment to principal and interest, because paragraph B4 and 11B only accommodate the situation where the party who initiates the prepayment compensate the other party and not the other way around. So, based on our interactions with interest party, we understand that in practice, the symmetric prepayment options exist in various different shapes and forms, as set out on slide 5. The board is not proposing that all of the symmetric prepayment options will be eligible to be measured at amortized cost or fair value through OCI. The proposed exception will only apply if two specific conditions are met. And let me take you through the thought process the board have gone through to develop those two conditions. So the IASB's view is that amortized costs provide useful and relevant information for particular financial assets in particular situations. The amortized cost uses an effective interest method, which is relatively simple measurement technique, which allocates interest income over a relevant period. And the objective of the SPPI condition in IFRS 9 is to identify instrument where effective interest method will result in useful and relevant information. Therefore, any proposal to measure financial asset at amortized cost need to be limited to those for which the effective interest method will result in useful and relevant information. With that in mind, as set out on slide 7, when developing this proposal, the ISB considered the prepayment amounts that could arise from financial assets that is consistent with paragraph B4111B, and compared those cash flows with the prepayment amount that could arise from the symmetric prepayment option. So let's go through them by looking at slide 8. So let's say there are two contracts. In both the lender and the borrower have prepayment option. The only difference between the two assets is in asset A, the compensation will only come from the party who initiates the prepayment. But in asset B, in the second asset on our diagram, the compensation can go either direction. It doesn't matter who chooses to prepay, the compensation will come, it can go either direction depending on the market interest rate changes. So if you applying the existing IFRS 9, the asset A could meet the SPPI condition, but asset B will not because of the symmetric nature of the compensation. But if you look at the contractual cash flow prepayment amounts, the asset B does not introduce any additional or different contractual cash flows. It is in both situations, the prepayment amount are unpaid principal and interest plus or minus the compensation amount, which reflects the effect of changes in interest rate. So because of this, the board thought the mechanics of the effective interest method could work if the symmetric prepayment option does not introduce any different contractual cash flows. So here comes the first condition, which is really important. So it has the symmetric prepayment option will get this exception only if the only reason that it fails to meet the SPPI condition and paragraph B4 and 11B is this direction or symmetric nature of the compensation. If the financial asset fails the SPPI condition, fails the B4 and 11B for any other reason, then you don't get the exception. So that is the first condition. And although the board thinks the mechanics of the amortized cost could work for this type, for some type of symmetric prepayment option, the board does not think that is consistent with the notion of basic lending arrangement, which underpins the SPPI condition in IFRS 9. And for that reason, the board decided to propose an additional eligibility condition, which is the second condition as set out on slide 10, which is at the initial recognition, the fair value of the prepayment feature need to be insignificant. The board thinks this is a straightforward way to limit the scope of the exception and to ensure the financial assets are not measured at amortized cost when it is likely that non-SPPI cash flows or negative compensation will occur. Further, this is consistent with the eligibility condition for the existing exception in IFRS 9. So on slide 11 and 12, this is the summary of the IASB's tentative decision. On slide 11, this is the proposed amendment with the two conditions. And on slide 12, this is decision around the effective date and transition. So the board is proposing the retrospective application and the same effective date as IFRS 9. And at the same time, the board is aware that the there may not be a sufficient time for the effective date to apply this amendment, and therefore the board decided to also ask a question whether a later effective date would be more appropriate in the exposure draft. And on the final slide, we have the target timeline, and with that, I will open up the session for any comments and questions you might have.
Thank you, Uni. So one of the reasons for discussing this with you today is that given the comment period on this document of 30 days, which is obviously short, we're going to be very reliant on you as part of spreading the word to make sure that people respond to us on a timely basis, given the timeline that we're working to try and help people applying IFRS 9. Alexandra.
Just a simple point here. Maybe it's implied by that, just to make sure. Mm-hmm. And I believe that the compensation on the symmetric arrangement, that the compensation must be proportional to the foregone payments only, could not be leveraged compensation. You know what I mean? So I got a compensation, but then the compensation is much higher because there is a some sort of trigger on the compensation.
Yeah.
So people embedded some sort of,
yeah.
It's insignificant at inception, but only should be only the present value of the foregone payments.
a limitation on the actual amount paid.
The amount feature will stop that, Alessandro. You must meet the amount feature, which is the reasonable compensation. So if it's levered or anything, you will fail it. So you will not get the exemption anyway.
Okay, so
it wouldn't meet the prepayment, even if it's one way, that wouldn't meet the feature.
Yeah. Okay, so it's clear that. Okay.
Yeah, but that's a really, it's a really important point, isn't it? Mm-hmm. So the words in the standard already say reasonable additional compensation for early termination. So it needs to be a reasonable amount to make people whole for the event that has occurred. So, and that's already a condition, which is why Uni was very careful in the way she worded it, which was you need to already meet the criteria.
Yeah, but that
the only problem was this, the two-way nature of it.
That was why the question arise, because it was something like, it's a reasonable compensation, but must, and what you understand by reasonable compensation is it's not something else, you know. It's not related to all the market variables. It's not related to this.
And the focus of the Interpretation Committee discussion was on the sort of normal word, the word compensation, which is I receive something because I've suffered harm, as opposed to I suffer.
Suffering.
Wanhee.
Well, first of all, ACE members agreed that the ISP should be addressing this issue as a matter of a priority, and the exception should be kept narrow in scope to avoid any unintended consequences. However, members have some requests and questions. First, to request, members ask for additional guidance, for instance, providing an example in the ID section, and requested a clarification on the word insignificant, and also how to measure an initial recognition, for instance, whether to use spot rate or forward rate to value the option. And questions. Question is regards to how this issue is common. Surveying AOST members, symmetric prepayment option, but are not common feature in financial instrument except for one country, although that one country says that such options are becoming more common. So I'm curious about how the ISP and IFRIC consider the criterion of the widespreadness or prevalence as described in the due process handbook. And did the ISP make the decision based on widespreadness, or did they consider more the urgency of the matter? So if my memory is correct, when the IFRIC first received the submission, it usually sent out the email to National Standard Setters asking for whether this issue is common or not. So I'm not sure whether you followed that step or not.
Sorry?
Whether you followed that due process.
The due process for this one for IFRIC chemistry, when we national standard setters is to see if there's diversity in practice. This is IFRS 9. There was no question of finding out whether there was diversity in practice. And so even for the IFRIC, it was done without outreach to explain to them what was the issue and brought back to the board. Regarding where the impact is, we have spoken to quite a few. Yes, it's where it is present in certain jurisdiction, it's very big, because as Uni mentioned in a slide, it comes from the legal requirements to be fair to both sides, so you cannot have unfair contracts, so it is present. It is present also, if not big, in certain significant amounts in certain not only retail but commercial products in certain industries because of industry practice. And so we did speak to industry associations about this to determine what is the impact of it. IFRIC discussion, as you rightly pointed out, was regarding the interpretation of 9 and whether that was clear and what IFRS 9 said, but not on the diversity issue because very few people have applied 9. And that is something we have followed with other issues of 9 as well.
So just to add to that, I think the other point for the board was we've been very vocal about the fact that we are standing ready to help people in the implementation process of the big new standards. So I think we see it very much as being consistent with being hopefully helpful in the implementation process. So that's why we addressed it. You raised another couple of points as well, Wonhee, in terms of other areas that could be classified. So what I think you used the word insignificant, what some of these other terms mean. In a sense, we've consciously tried to touch as little as possible, because while we want to, we're trying to find the right balance, and you can tell us when you respond to the ED whether we've got the balance right, between being helpful and being unhelpful. So we're trying to answer the specific question that we were asked, which is about does the direction matter, and trying to address that without opening a whole load of other questions about what does reasonable additional compensation mean, you know, what are some of these other terms mean, because we're conscious of the fact that people, hopefully, are a long way down the implementation process, and we don't really want to open a whole load of other areas we don't need to. So I hear your points, but I think that's sort of how we've tried to balance it.
Just to add, and I know you all haven't seen the draft because it's still not ready, and you'll see it. Some of the issues we'll elaborate a little bit more in the basis, but if you also see, we have tried not to use any new terms. The term insignificant also comes from the existing exception that's already there in IFRS 9 for the other type of prepayment features. So hopefully what we are trying to achieve, and I know it's a tricky thing and you'll get to hear, is to walk that tightrope without causing more problems and trying to provide a solution to the problem that's in hand.
Andreas.
Two comments. One is the potential danger of ripple effect. Obviously, you're catering for an exception, and I'm with you on, technically speaking, on that exception. I could see other parties demanding equivalent change because they feel that there is an issue that the board has overlooked when developing the standard, and they should be equally given amortized cost treatment. And I think to refute that might be difficult in arguing. So I think it very much depends, again, on communication as to how you present this. My bigger point relates to effective date and transition.
Mm-hmm.
If your timeline is accurate and you anticipate issuance of the standard in October 2017, if we applied the normal process in Europe, there's no way I think we could endorse this before the effective date. And if everything turns sour, it won't even be endorsed before people close their books, really. So I would have a strong tendency for saying go for a later effective date, but allow for early application. But that would only address part of the issue, because I understand that you choosing 1st January 2018 means you do away with that, and combine that with a retrospective application. You don't force entities to change their accounting. Well, if in Europe it happens to be that the standard needs to be applied first on initial transition, but without the amendment, and later on we do have that transition issue, and an extra paragraph that would explain what happened then might be useful.
If you come in later, exactly, after your date of initial application.
Exactly.
Absolutely. It's already something we've got in
mind. Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Andrew.
We've been asking our financial instruments working group the extent to which they've encountered symmetric prepayment options, and the responses are still coming in that thus far these types of features clearly exist in Switzerland, I think is well known, but also in the UK, Germany, France, Italy, no doubt elsewhere. It's not clear that they're actually a sort of a widespread part of a bank's typical loan portfolio, but they're certainly widespread in geographic terms. Andreas has explained the specific European concern in terms of timeliness of the endorsement process. I do wonder if we need to be quite so definitive that this is actually a substantive change rather than a clarification. I know that's the majority of IFRIC members thought also that compensation can only be one direction, but isn't the the higher principle is whether overall the cash flows are solely principal and interest, and the sorts of adjustments here that relate to changes in the interest rate, maybe not all compensation clauses will be quite so directly linked to changes in the interest rate, but nonetheless in those types of situations, the ultimate cash flows will be SPPI, whichever way the compensation goes. So I think some of the language around here is very definitive. You know, on slide 9, negative compensation is not consistent with the notion of a basic lending arrangement. Well, I understand in Switzerland it's entirely consistent with the notion of a basic lending arrangement.
Not the way that we defined it in IFRS 9. So this is where we've had a bit of a struggle. So
right.
In the staff's defence, they've completely articulated on the slides what the Interpretations Committee and the Board decided.
Yeah.
And the challenge we've had is, and one of the reasons why I think some of us, at least I was, and other board members, I believe, were quite keen to re-articulate this, is because it's also an opportunity to remind people that 9 doesn't just say what you think is principal and interest. Mm-hmm. It's actually
what's
as described in IFRS 9, and that's partly what we're trying to improve the articulation of as well. Mm-hmm. Board members, would you agree with that? So that's part, and I understand that it would be easier for some people if we were a bit softer, but it's not the decision that was made by the committee and the board.
And that's, Andrew, I appreciate where you're coming from and why, but that's been consistently messaged through the update, the IFRIC update and everything. It's, I don't think it leaves as much room for flexibility on this issue, because it also comes in issues where we come in is, as Alexander was saying, what is reasonable compensation, and what people have thought is reasonable compensation because that's what market practice allows. That's not what IFRS 9 takes the view. So that's the reason why the clarity came about. I appreciate where you're coming from, but we'll try and hum a few bars, but that's one of the things which is where we stand. And that's why we are making an amendment. If you could have done this through an interpretation, trust me, I could have gone home a lot earlier.
I think on that point, what is reasonable compensation? I know that's not the focus of this proposal, yeah. But I do think you might think about what's reasonable somewhat differently in the symmetric scenario. If only the party that exercises the option, if the party that exercises the option chooses whether or not to pay compensation, which would be the case in the asymmetric pattern, you might argue if they're making the choice, which they're free to make, it's reasonable. If they can force the counterparty to pay them compensation, you might assess reasonableness somewhat differently.
I think that's where the difference in views are coming from. We assess what compensation under the what is required in 9, and that's where the board ended up, and also the IFRIC ended up.
Okay, well, Andreas, I've explained where Europe's going to end up, and just a bit of a pickle, so to speak. But
If you go to the text here, I believe it's clear that because they say compensation, I'm trying to find here, but they say compensation for the amount, exactly for the amount forgone. So I think the wording is
it's quite clear.
Okay. Thanks, Sue. Just first of all, just a question in terms of clarification. So if the borrower prepays and we're saying if the interest rate has decreased, that I presume is the market interest rates have decreased.
Yeah.
So the value of the instrument has increased. And is that effectively then the quantum of the compensation? I mean, is it effectively that fair value differential?
It's not the fair value. We are not going into liquidity, credit, or other things. So effectively what it is looking at is, let's say I have lent you the money at a fixed rate.
Yes.
Interest rates have dropped, and you give me the money back.
Yes.
If I were to reinvest that money, I wouldn't get that higher fixed rate, so you would compensate me for that difference. So that is the point which Sue was making. It is reasonable compensation for interest rates for early termination. And that's how market also do that test, what is reasonable additional compensation.
But now is the compensation based on that new rate for the remaining term of,
compared to,
so it's not equal to the fair value,
no,
of that.
It's the interest rate.
It's the interest rate differential.
Just the interest rate differential.
Compensation.
Okay. Because what I was then just thinking is that, and also based on the proposed amendment, is that one of the requirements is that the fair value of the prepayment feature needs to be insignificant initially. Is that if we didn't have the IFRS 9 model and we effectively had the old IAS 39 model,
yes,
would we have an embedded derivative in here that would need to be separated out? The host, you could carry at amortized cost, but
exactly,
the embedded would have to be at fair value. So are we effectively saying, well, under that model, you would still get your host at amortized cost, and that's what you're proposing here. the value of the derivative is insignificant, so no need to worry too much about it. I suppose the question then is the subsequent measurement. So even if we go with the whole instrument here being at amortized cost, you would still need to be adjusting based
There's revised expectations of cash flows. Absolutely, you would have to.
That's right.
And we reference that.
We reference that as well in the...
in the basis to the standard. So we make the point that, because you're exactly right, that if you've got one of these instruments and you're measuring it at amortized cost, you're going to have to make assessments about the likelihood of these prepayment events happening.
Yes.
And that should be reflected in your effective interest method calculations. And if those changes and assumptions are changed, you need to do catch-up adjustments.
That's
and
right.
Profit or loss to reflect that. And we remind people of that in the draft of the basis.
Because I suppose the other possible solution would be, I mean, again, if we are making an exception here, would be to have people treat the prepayment as a separate derivative at fair value.
But these are assets under 9, we don't split them.
I know you don't, but again, you're making an exception.
But that would be
that
more
would
than
be
a tweak.
Much
so,
so
it was a question of, I suppose the question is which answer provides more relevant information?
If you talk about ripple effects, you know what the ripple effect of that
one
is.
That ripple effect of that one? So I'll be here for the next few years.
Is it easier depicting the changes in amortized costs?
It's the same thing which would happen under, I would say, not the same thing, similar. The amortized cost will catch up, the catch-up adjustments will reflect it. Even if you split the embedded, these things would have, as I said, if they're insignificant fair value, wouldn't be shown up on the balance sheet anyway.
Initially?
If they catch up, you would have a fair value adjustment. Here, you will have a catch-up adjustment.
Okay, so is it pretty much of a match? So I guess I was just saying, if we're going down the route of saying, well, what provides the most relevant information? Well, which option does provide the most relevant information?
Yeah.
Well, I think I know which does, but that's, we are where we are. The board has decided that amortized cost is good information, but we do think that as part of that, it's important that where the assessment of If you get all the way to the point that you think your expected cash flows have changed, if I can put it that way,
yes,
then we think it is important to remind people there are catch-up adjustments, so it's not set and forget.
Yeah.
It's not set and forget, absolutely. Fair value will be faster, Kim. You will pick it up faster with other things, but you will catch up.
Yukia.
I have a 3 comment. The first is the standard development process. Considering that the IFRS 9 was issued after the extensive discussion, this issue does not seem to be such an emergent issue that warrants the shortest comment period permitted under the due process handbook. Second is classification and measurement in IFRS 9. Providing exception to each type of instrument on a piecemeal basis would complicate IFRS 9. We think it's better to fundamentally revisit the concept of classification and measurement in IFRS 9, including the SPPI condition, including the notion of basic lending arrangement and guidance to determine whether cash flows are simple. And thirdly, tentative decision set out on the slide. We are concerned that the amendment may lead to a new interpretation that even when a reasonable additional compensation in paragraph B4, 111B of IFRS 9 is a positive compensation, it should be limited to factors related to changes in the market interest rate. We are also concerned that it may be difficult to determine whether the fair value of the prepayment feature is insignificant when the entity initially recognizes the financial asset.
Can I understand, UQ, where you're coming from? I know it's a short comment period, and we did it because it's critical that we at least try to get it out before 1st of January 2018. And actually, we took it to our due process oversight committee because we need special permission to do this, and they approved it as well. I appreciate it's an exception, and as the discussion with Kim, which point raised, which is the best way, we think this is the best and the quickest cut to do this. Regarding your point that reasonable additional compensation should only reflect changes in market interest rates, that's the intention of the standard. It shouldn't incorporate other factors, and we will try and clarify that, put in something in the basis based on what we have done. That is clearly what the intention is of the standard. It shouldn't become a fair value measurement because it becomes a fair value put. That's what we are trying to do. Regarding whether determining whether these are insignificant or not, I think from what we have heard from practice, people have a lot of experience with dealing with these because of the IAS 39 requirements, because you had to split those, but these were usually split and kept there because they were not usually material fair value, but they had to track it. So I think from what we have heard, it should be possible. They have the data.
We'll see in the feedback. Linda, timing.
Well, yeah. Okay, so our large banks are going live with IFRS 9 November the 1st. And also legally, we have to have it in our handbook before they can apply it. So I've already pointed out that from a timing perspective, anything you can do, because we also have to translate. Yeah, you can't put it in our handbook until it's in both languages. Anything you can do to help us, yes. So we do have the timing issue. In terms of the presence of these terms, interestingly enough, we don't believe, this is all based on understanding the wording as we understand it today. Yeah. We're not really going to understand until we actually see the document. So it's early days yet. Don't believe they exist in the big Okay, I'll shut up. Okay.
Not his wife.
Completely lost my train of thought. No, so we don't believe that these exist in the large financial institutions in their retail space. We are not clear whether they exist in their commercial / structured finance space, and they're looking for them. On a preliminary basis, they certainly support the amendment, and they support the fact that you are trying to help out with implementation. Where they do exist is in credit unions.
Yes.
And they exist widespread in credit unions, and they are the smaller organizations who are going to need more help to fully understand, including what insignificant means. So, again, we're supportive, but anything you can do to deal with the timing and the process issues is going to be very important.
Appreciate it, Linda. Fully appreciate it. We'll try and get it. We're working on the translations. We have, I don't know whether the French one, but we have, what we have done is we have already working ahead of schedule with our translations teams and everything out here so that we can get it out as quickly. But we'll keep it in mind. We're fully aware of it.
First of all, we supported the board decision and also supported the board to finalize the amendment as soon as possible. We are very concerned about the timeline. The reason is that China are going to issue our new financial instruments standards, which is fully converted with IFRS 9 very soon this month.
Yeah, I know.
So I'm looking at the exposure draft will be issued next month. I hope that the draft document could be available by now to me. And let me check the wording and whether we could include something into our final document. Because once we formally issued our standards, it's very difficult to make amendments very soon, very short time. So this is why my request that I support the decision. Hopefully, yes. Yeah.
Sounds like you should have a chat to Kumar.
Yeah.
I wouldn't recommend including these words in there because this is still subject to comments after exposure, Jinkar. Let's have a chat. As you said, fully appreciate it's a 30-day period. We are still going through the pre-ballot stage, so the words are changing. But let's have a chat to see how best we can do
this. Thank you.
Chris.
So we're also supportive. These things do exist in Australia, and they certainly are in one of our biggest banks. So it's pretty topical for them. So the feedback from our panel was, I think it might be an interpretation issue, and again, it's not having seen the words. Their concern was this would seem to fix the issue if it's an origination problem, but they think that there are also still going to be issues if you've acquired a portfolio of loans with this, because their concern was that you wouldn't meet the insignificant fair value criteria if it's as part of an acquisition. So they weren't sure whether you were deliberately trying to exclude those or whether or not it just hadn't been thought about. So.
Okay.
Similar question of what is the purpose for the insignificant fair value, because if it's at origination and it's reasonable compensation, it's symmetric, and it can only be effectively for changes in the market interest rate. It seems that at inception, if you're looking at that, it would have a payoff profile that's similar to a swap, and it would almost always be either insignificant or near zero. And so was this trying to just preclude the same feature from being in an acquired loan where rates have changed? And if so, you wonder why, if I originated a loan, it would be okay, but if I acquired that same loan a year later, that feature would somehow be offending. And so I think the fair value test, you ought to think about why you need it or why it's there.
One of the key reasons, and fair point, it could be near, but when we talk to some of the constituents and other things, the fair value of this thing, according to their, when they run the numbers, James, was when they computed the difference on what they were saying, it was saying the fair value was coming down to negligible or insignificant or whichever way we put it. One, certainly, if they're close to market, there's it. It could be other factors where they were seeing certain points of liquidity and the other credit premiums were getting, but they were getting also compensated for the spread. So the spread difference was giving them quite a big difference. The reason why it was getting insignificant, because the strike of this option was very rare. People didn't strike it. They didn't exercise it very often. Haven't thought about the portfolio bit. Haven't thought about the portfolio, but that's what we need to consider.
But
yes, but you could have a difference, because if you set it at a credit spread, which you are getting, let's say LIBOR plus a spread of X percent, and when you're getting a compensation, you are getting it for the LIBOR movement, but the spread is also there, that was giving them significant fair value.
But so is the idea that you have to measure each leg of the option, because it seems like when they're symmetric, you have puts and calls, or are you measuring the fair value gross or net?
Let me clarify. When you have symmetric, I know it looks like a forward payoff. That's what you're saying, puts and calls. But the symmetric feature is that I am the borrower. I can exercise this option. If it's in the money, the lender pays me, or if I'm in the money, I pay the lender. So it's not on either side like a forward. You can't exercise it.
No, but there's options going both ways at origination. And so are you talking about measuring
the whole
gross
option.
Fair value, or are you going to offset the value of the put with the value of the call? Because if you offset those features are symmetric. So you would think.
For a portfolio, you're saying if you get to offset.
Unless both parts can exercise the option, but they are symmetrical on the part. So in my part, there is a trigger, and in your part, there is no trigger. So that's very complicated.
That gets.
I understand your point. We'll look at the drafting.
Yeah.
Okay. Was that what you needed, Kumar? Is that everything?
So, yes, and if you could spread the word and get comments on a timely basis to help us try and meet people's deadlines, that would be much appreciated. And we'll move as fast as we can internally as well.